Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, February 23rd, and I'm Nat Cardos, reporting for KMUD. Please forgive me, I lost my voice over the weekend, so I'm going to sound a little bit harsh today. But anyways, in tonight's news, updates on the search and recovery from the Eel River after fatal car crash last week, Soham Cannabis Nursery gets zoning and setback changes in permit approval, and the National Weather Service issues wind advisory, flood watch, and coastal flood advisory. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Last week, on Tuesday, February 17th, the California Highway Patrol, CHP, responded to reports of a vehicle collision into the Eel River off of Highway 162 at approximately mile marker 10.9. According to reports, a vehicle had left the roadway, went down an embankment, and into the Eel River. The vehicle had been occupied by Gary, 89, and Yvonne, 91, Neeson, from Covelo. Search efforts on Tuesday were called off due to unsafe weather, high water levels, and poor water visibility. The search continued for the following 3 days until their vehicle was discovered by a private diver assisting the family near the crash site. A day later, February 21st, at approximately 2 p.m., Yvonne Neeson was discovered approximately 5 miles downriver by kayakers on a previously planned trip. KMUD News spoke with Captain Quincy Cromer with the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office for more information on the incident.
Yeah, on Tuesday, that would be February 17th of 2026, just around 11:34 in the morning, some Mendocino County Sheriff deputies overheard radio traffic regarding a vehicle collision into the Eel River on Highway 162, and that was in the area mile marker 10.9 on Highway 162. So sheriff's deputies, officers with the California Highway Patrol, medical personnel, and others responded to the scene. They determined a family member had located vehicle debris and personal belongings near the river in that area, which indicated a vehicle had entered the fast-moving water. The vehicle had been occupied by Gary and Yvonne Neeson from Covelo, California. The husband and wife were at that time reportedly traveling from Covelo to the Willits area on February 17th with plans to meet a family member for an appointment. Over the next several days, search and rescue and other personnel performed efforts in that area to include swift water rescue teams, and they were all trying to locate the Neesons and their vehicle but had negative results. They couldn't find the car. Search conditions in that area during that time were extremely difficult due to recent storms, water flow, difficult terrain, and the constantly changing river conditions. Our sheriff's deputies ultimately took a missing person report for Gary and Yvonne Neeson due to the circumstances of the ongoing investigation. So on Friday, that'd be February 20th of 2026, family members of these missing persons were able to enlist the help of a private diver identified as Juan Heredia, who is the founder of the Angels Recovery Dive Team. Heredia did respond to Highway 162 and was able to locate the vehicle and confirm that only Gary Neeson was within the vehicle. A heavy-duty tow truck responded to the scene and was able to recover the vehicle and Gary Neeson from the river, and Gary was positively identified by Sheriff's Deputy Coroner investigators. Efforts continued on Saturday because of incoming rain. Again, we knew this was a short window to perform these recovery efforts. And we had approximately 40 searchers from multiple agencies throughout the state who arrived and began searching the area. Two Good Samaritans who were also in the area on a planned kayaking trip were there. And at about 2 p.m. in the afternoon on Saturday, February 21st, the kayakers notified searchers they'd located the deceased subject in the Eel River in the area of mile marker 14.1 on Highway 162. Personnel were able to recover that subject, who was positively identified as Yvonne Neeson by Sheriff's Deputy Coroner investigators. The family and legal next of kin of Gary and Yvonne Neeson were notified of this investigation and were also present and assisted with the ongoing efforts to locate and recover the vehicle from the Eel River. And the Sheriff's Office would like to thank the multiple agencies who were too long to name, who responded throughout the region to assist in the rescue and recovery efforts.
In a social media statement, the Neeson family thanked the two kayakers as well as all of the different agencies and volunteers that took part in the 5-day search and recovery operation. More than 28 different agencies took part in this search and recovery effort. CHP confirmed in a press release that although no additional occupants are believed to be unaccounted for, the crash is still under investigation. Anyone with information about the collision is asked to contact the CHP Garberville Area Office at 707 732-6100 or the Humboldt Communication Center at 707-268-2000. Cannabis nurseries are important to Humboldt County's cannabis industry, and one just got permitted in the Bryceland area. Daniel Mintz reports.
Reflecting its value to the cannabis industry, a Southern Humboldt cannabis nursery has gotten a permit that includes a zoning change and reduction of a streamside buffer. Approved at the February 19th Humboldt County Planning Commission meeting, the permit is for an existing nursery, which senior planner Stephen Santos described as, quote, a little bit unusual. The 10,000-square-foot Bryceland area operation is located near the intersection of Old Bryceland Road and Bryceland Thorn Road. It began as a bamboo nursery in 2005 and converted to cannabis in 2012. It operated in compliance under an interim permit through late 2025 when the interim permitting program ended. Santos explained why the zoning change from a commercial to an agricultural category is, quote, within the public interest.
It is arguable in that the project is within the public interest because a nursery, it's okay for a nursery to operate on the site, a non-cannabis nursery. So it makes sense to allow a cannabis nursery that's already operating to continue operating. And there is a need for cannabis nurseries to support the local industry. There are other cannabis operations, permitted cannabis operations in the vicinity, and there would be no impacts on roads or adjoining parcels.
The nursery's driveway, parking area, and the footprint of an on-site residence are within a 100-foot streamside management area, SMA, as discussed by Santos.
Right now, the site is not quite operating under compliance with it when it comes to the streamside management area because part of the driveway access and the parking area, which you can see kind of flush to the west side, are within the streamside management area. And then the existing streamside management area also cuts through the residence and some of the curtilage of the residence. The gray line just to the east represents the recommended alteration of the streamside management area. And so this would allow the parking area to be compliant and everything else to the west of that proposed gray line. This recommendation in the biological assessment has been reviewed by staff and it's been reviewed by California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and both support this recommendation. It's consistent with the existing site conditions.
But the CDFW also requested a condition that's part of the permit to install a fence marking the revised SMA. Santos said the fence will, quote, make sure that development and impacts and uses and operations aren't occurring within the management area. But applicant Michael Jacobal, doing business as Plant Humboldt LLC, said the fence requirement poses, quote, a massive problem as it would affect access and hamper turnarounds of vehicles larger than cars. He said the fence doesn't improve streamside management and that he could demonstrate that through a site visit. Reluctant to change a CDFW requested requirement, Commissioner Ivor Skavdal suggested an on-site negotiation process.
I don't dispute anything that the applicant said as far as the constraint that it's probably going to put on his property or operation. And I think condition already does say this, but maybe if we can make it more clear, if the applicant, biologist, and CDFW agree on the location of the fencing, that would be okay, at least as far as I'm concerned. So if the applicant's proposal to go out and walk around the site with CDFW or their biologists and stake out the fence line and agree on that, that would be okay with me.
A motion to approve the permit included allowance for the fence to be reconfigured to the satisfaction of the biologist and CDFW. The permit approval passed unanimously. The on-site residence also figures into the zoning change as it was built without a permit. Santos said, quote, one of the positive side effects of the zoning change is that, quote, it will be easier for the property owner to get that residence permitted. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Today, the National Weather Service in Eureka issued a wind advisory and a flood watch for this evening to tomorrow afternoon. A coastal flood advisory has also been issued for tomorrow morning. This is all due to a storm that will be coming through tonight, bringing between 1.5 to 4 inches of rain with it. Higher elevation areas could see up to 6 inches of rain, like King's Range or further north in Klamath. KMUD News spoke with Jacob Boomsma, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Eureka, for more information on the storm.
So we're seeing up to, in coastal Humboldt, kind of like Humboldt Bay area, we could see 1/2 inch to 2 inches. But when you're looking out into the mountains, King Range could see over 6 inches, pretty widespread over 6 inches, maybe up to 8 in some areas. And then other higher terrain areas like northern Humboldt and into Del Norte could see 3 to 4 inches of rain. And a lot of this is falling, probably starting from this afternoon to kind of early tomorrow morning. So this is like an 18-hour rain event, and you're getting this much rain. So it's a lot of rain really fast.
The wind advisory states that Del Norte, Southwest, and Interior Humboldt will be seeing southerly winds between 25 to 40 miles per hour, with gusts up to 55 miles per hour. The strongest gusts are anticipated more over exposed ridges and coastal headlands. The Humboldt coast will be seeing gusts between 25 to 40 miles per hour. Here's Boomsma with more.
We have a wind advisory in effect starting tonight into early tomorrow morning for King Range, Interior Humboldt County, and Del Norte County, including Crescent City. So generally we're seeing gusts of 45 to 50, maybe locally up to 60 miles per hour on those wind-prone ridges, coastal headlands. More lower elevations in Humboldt, there's not an advisory out, but there is still some potential for some gusty winds, maybe up to 35 miles per hour, maybe 40. A freak gust of 40 wouldn't be out of the question, but generally lighter winds than what we saw over the weekend.
Due to the heavy and fast rain coming our way, a flood watch is also in effect, and potential impacts include increased risk of flooding of small streams, creeks, and poor drainage areas, as well as high flows on main stem rivers and rock or mudslides along roadways.
With the rain, you're going to see some rapid rises in the creeks and streams, and also the main stem rivers. We have a flood watch out in effect for some potential for that small stream and creek flooding. Think of like freshwater and the Elk River and maybe the Mattole River as well. Those kinds of smaller rivers and creeks and streams. Those main stem rivers like the Eel and the Mad are currently forecast to stay below flood stage, but they will see some rapid rises. I think the Eel is forecast to hit monitor stage. But generally, you could see some minor flooding impacts, like some flooded roads around the area. That's something to be expected. With the winds, you could see, again, some power outages possible. The winds are going to be a little bit lighter, so maybe a little less risk of power outages, but especially up there in Crescent City and Del Norte, like the whole county lost power for the weekend. So definitely a concern up there, and generally some trees down and tree debris on the roads are also possible.
For up-to-date weather information, the website is weather.gov/EKA. KMUD News caught up with Amy Torones, Family Resource Center Coordinator with Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District, for events coming up for them. Tell me a bit about the community baby shower.
Yeah, our community baby shower this year is March 7th. From 12 to 3, and it'll be at the Wellness Center on the South Fork High School campus. I want to say it's our 7th annual, so it's kind of been a community event that people have been looking forward to, and always well attended and a lot of fun. It's a prenatal, perinatal health event, similar to like a health fair that we make a little bit more fun and have like raffles and food. Any expecting parents or parents of 0 to 2 year olds, or anybody who plans on getting pregnant or would like to get pregnant in the next, year or so, are welcome to attend. Any of their family members or support group can come as well. And yeah, it should be a lot of fun. We'll have nonprofit agencies from Northern Humboldt, from First Five to Redwood Rural will be there. We have the Maternal Adolescent and Family Health Group, just a lot of resources and programs for little ones.
And so tell me about the other upcoming spring events you guys have going on.
We are starting Parent Project Parenting Class, and that will be starting March 4th, this Wednesday coming up, and it's from 5 to 7. It's a 10-week course for parents who are parenting kids age 10 to 18, so it's a little bit of our preteen and teen parents, and that's a great class too. What I typically say is we're not teaching you anything you don't know, but we're building your confidence to implement what you have knowledge of already, implementing the discipline or implementing the routines in a sense. And I usually say it that way because oftentimes, like I say, it's not rocket science. Most parents know and could probably spit out, you know, and talk about the importance of a bedtime routine or importance of sobriety for teens. But sometimes it's just building their confidence to be able to implement that in their home. And so that's what we really, really try to do at our parenting classes. Another event that we have coming up is, oh, it's even more exciting. Our Touch a Truck event will be April 25th. So we have a little bit of ways for that. Last year, we had the Coast Guard land their helicopter. It was a very big deal in Redway, and it was really exciting and fun. And we're hoping to top that this year, if you could imagine that. And we're going to incorporate the Southern Humboldt Firemen Games at our Touch a Truck. And our vision behind that is to really build the morale of our volunteer firemen and women by having the kid audience, if you will, the community kids around are going to be there and watch it and support and cheer on, which is going to be a lot of fun. And then we will create firemen games for the kids also. So it should be a lot of fun and hopefully build a bunch of morale and just have a lot of good laughs. Southern Humboldt Firemen Games is a day event that the Garberville Chamber of Commerce has put on for a few years. And it's just fun challenges and competition within our volunteer fire departments, such as timing them in race to put on all their gear, or they use buckets with holes in it to move water from one pail to another. Just really fun, different games, if you will, or challenges. Mm-hmm. And it's a fundraiser for our fire departments, but it's also just a way to build morale in our volunteers. And last year, I noticed as a community member going to observe the games, it lacked a little morale boosting. I'll be honest, there wasn't a huge turnout. And, you know, I kind of immediately thought to myself, how can we make this better? I couldn't imagine a better way to support and motivate our volunteer firemen than having, you know, 100 little ones cheering you on. So we thought that would be really fun. And since the fire departments oftentimes come with their fire trucks to our Touch a Truck events, we thought incorporating it this year would just boost morale and awareness of our volunteers. We have a monthly, it's called Multiplicity Therapeutic Services, but it's a caregiver group for parents or caregivers of any children with developmental disabilities. And it's just a great place to come and get information, share information, ask questions. If you have any concerns about your little one's development, it's just a great place to start. And so I really kind of want to showcase the fact that if there's anything happening at home that, you know, just doesn't feel right or timely in that developmental timeline, if you will, they can give us a call and we can connect them and they can come to our support group.
For more information, the website is sohumhealth.org. In national news, Supreme Court rejects Trump's tariffs as unlawful. Trump claims foreign influence over court and announces new replacement tariffs, KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
President Donald Trump has called tariff his favorite word in the dictionary. In his second term, he's used tariffs as a key economic tool and also as a key foreign policy tool, a sort of play along or we'll slip you a convincer. Trump even credits his tariffs for saving millions of lives by ending wars across the globe. But on Friday, the Supreme Court ruled against the tariffs he unilaterally imposed under an emergency powers law, including the sweeping reciprocal tariffs levied on nearly every other country. Trump was not amused. He gave his response to the ruling in a news conference. But first, his characteristic first thoughts on taking to the podium to brief reporters.
Wow, that's a lot of people. That's a new record. We set a record every time.
Then he launched into the topic at hand.
The Supreme Court's ruling on tariffs is deeply disappointing, and I'm ashamed of certain members of the court, absolutely ashamed, for not having the courage to do what's right for our country.
The ruling in question comes in the case Learning Resources versus Trump, a lawsuit brought by a group of states and small businesses that argued that tariffs Trump levied by executive order go beyond what's allowed by the law that Trump used. That was a 1977 law on commerce during national emergencies created by foreign threats. The court's ruling says that law, known as IEEPA, does not give the president tariff power. Chief Justice John Roberts also noted that in 50 years, no president has read the law as granting such power. Trump blasted the justices that voted against him, especially what he calls Democratic justices. The three justices appointed by Democratic presidents, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. He accused them of being politically correct.
What a shame, having to do with voting in particular, when in fact they're just being fools and lapdogs for the rhinos and the radical left Democrats, and not that this should have anything at all to do with it. They're very unpatriotic and disloyal to our Constitution.
He praised the three conservative justices that voted against the final decision, Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, and Brett Kavanaugh. As for his own appointees to the court who voted against him, Justices Neil Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett, a reporter asked Trump whether he regretted appointing them to the bench. He said no, but
I think it's an embarrassment to their families. You want to know the truth, the two of them.
As for why the court would reject what Trump claims are smart legal actions, Trump has an explanation, though he offered no evidence to back it up.
It's my opinion that the court has been swayed by foreign interests and a political movement that is far smaller than people would ever think. It's a small movement. I won by millions of votes. We won in a landslide. With all the cheating that went on, there was a lot of it, but we still won in a landslide. Too big to rig. But these people are obnoxious, ignorant, and loud. They're very loud.
Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer gave a Democratic response to the court's ruling.
Today's SCOTUS decision was a win for the wallets of every American consumer that carried the burden of Trump's stupid trade war.
He focused on the cost to consumers from Trump's tariffs, a cost some have estimated at $1,000 per household, and he praised the Supreme Court's ruling.
The court agreed with what Democrats have said from day one. A president cannot ignore Congress and unilaterally slap these tariffs on the American people.
He did have some harsh words about Trump's earlier remarks.
Donald Trump's speech is just like his tariffs, erratic, disorganized, based on fiction.
The court's ruling leaves a number of big questions unresolved. For example, what about the roughly $175 billion that has already been collected from the now rejected tariffs? Trump notes the court ruling did not discuss that.
Wouldn't you think they would have put one sentence in there saying that keep the money or don't keep the money, right? I guess it has to get litigated for the next 2 years. So they write this terrible, defective decision, totally defective. It's almost like not written by smart people.
Trump says he's not thinking about refunds because that will be tied up in lawsuits for years. Trump's Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, offered his thoughts speaking at the Economic Club of Dallas after the ruling.
I got a feeling the American people won't see it.
Bessent said the administration is looking at other laws and opening new investigations that could be used to justify new replacement tariffs. And at his news conference, Trump announced a new global tariff based on different laws, although these tariffs can only last for 5 months.
Well, we're going straight ahead with 10% straight across the board, which was the absolute right to do. And that's taking place. That's a lot of money coming into our country. And then during that period of about 5 months, we are doing the various investigations necessary to put fair tariffs or tariffs, period, on other countries.
Another lingering question is what happens to the trade deals the Trump administration negotiated using the IEEPA tariffs? Trump does not sound worried.
Many of them stand, some of them won't, and they'll be replaced with the other tariffs.
The court's ruling marks a rare defeat for Trump, the first time the high court has ruled on a major part of Trump's agenda and rejected it. But Trump is not seeing it as a defeat, and he is vowing to plow forward.
The bottom line is that the word certainty is now in the equation. Every single thing I said today is guaranteed certainty. It's been tested as Jameson said 1,000 times, literally, I said hundreds of times. He said, sir, actually thousands of times, and won in all of the courts. And we're just going back to that. And the problem is that we had other presidents that weren't into trade. Maybe they weren't business oriented. Maybe they weren't smart. We had some dummies, too, you know, I respectfully say we had some real dummies. So we are going to keep it going just as before, probably more so.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Interior Department is reviewing signs posted at more than a dozen national parks and monuments as part of President Trump's agenda to, quote, restore truth and sanity to American history. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, one figured feature at the Hubble Trading Post National Historic Site on the Navajo Nation is now in the crosshairs.
To Navajos, Ganado Mucho, or many cattle, is like a folk hero. He went on the long walk, marching hundreds of miles to be held at a New Mexico fort until he and other leaders signed an 1868 treaty.
And he wasn't defeated in the easy binary of stories that are winners and losers. But peacemaker doesn't mean you're not a resistor.
Farina King is Diné and a University of Oklahoma professor. She says Mucho's legend may be at odds with how the U.S. wants to remember its past on the heels of the nation's 250th anniversary.
The thorns in the side, it's a disruption to the celebratory stories of manifest destiny, conquering the West, taming it, and subjecting indigenous peoples as if they're just a part of a wild landscape.
Once freed, Mucho then met fellow trader John Lorenzo Hubble and kept making peace in the Southwest, settling disputes, often between Mormon ranchers and Navajos. In 1878, Hubble set up his iconic trading post, still open to this day, and would rename that area, hence Ganado, Arizona. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Healthcare officials say a new level 4 EMS trauma facility opened by the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska will mean faster and more efficient care for residents who need emergency medical attention. Mark Moran has more.
Winnebago Comprehensive Healthcare Services completed a $15 million emergency department in December, which then received a level 4 trauma center designation from the Nebraska Department of Public Health. Marketing specialist Hallie Murray says the new facility is a dramatic upgrade over calling 911.
Maybe the response time for Winnebago is longer if you try to call 911. So here we actually have our own emergency line. It's just a quicker response time, whether that's just needing help with something, you know, a ride to the hospital in an ambulance.
It took 6 years for Winnebago's emergency department to earn the trauma center designation, which included rigorous training for the medical professionals and other staff who work there. In addition to having advanced training and updated treatment protocols, the site itself was subject to a series of inspections and reviews prior to its level 4 designation. Murray says the trauma center fills a big need.
There's always people who need help here on the reservation. Again, just getting to them quicker and helping them out the best that we can and helping them get the care that they deserve. And I would say, it's a huge need in the Winnebago community right now.
Nebraska has one level 1 trauma center located in Omaha.
That was Mark Moran reporting. A bill in the New Mexico legislature that would have allowed state driver's licenses and identifications to include a Native American designation failed as the session closed last week, New Mexico In-Depth reports. The bill would have allowed applicants to request a mark to appear on their license or ID as Native American. Supporters say it's in response to federal immigration actions taking place across the country, as Native Americans have been among those confronted by ICE, and having the designation would be another layer of identification. A handful of tribes in the state reportedly supported the bill. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Gathering of Nations Powwow. The Last Dance is this April 24th and 25th at Expo, New Mexico. Gon's Last Horse Rider and Regalia Parade takes place at 4 p.m. both days. Tickets at gatheringofnations.com and at the gates. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.